again, and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio, and I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Do you feel the world is changing? Are people thinking much different today than even 25 or 30 years ago? One ordinary man thinks so. Jonathan Harrison wrote his book, We Are All One, in just 6 days following a near-death experience. In his book, he shares the insights of what he calls the universal consciousness. He sees a major shift happening in thinking on every level, from ideas we have about the world to our relationships with each other. John Harrison is a spiritual guide, intuitive healer, and mystic. And We Are All One is his first publication. We reach him tonight in France. Hello, Jonathan. How you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, Jake. Thanks for inviting me onto the show, and it's good to speak to you.
Jonathan, it's great to have you on the show. And your book, We Are All One, came from a very unusual experience that you had. You call it a near-death experience, where you felt that you were out of the body and that this gave you a very unique insight into the world and what's going on around us. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, Jake, in springtime last year, I literally had a near-death experience. I fell to the floor, and my wife was with me. I'd felt queasy for some time, and then I fell to the floor, and what I remember of it is my wife trying to comfort me and also being very worried at the same time, thinking she should phone for the ambulance, etc. And this went on for some time, and we were sat there. I was slumped on the floor, as I remember, and my wife was sort of crouched down with me. And at some point, my eyes, if you like, or the way I was seeing, moved up out of my body. So I ended up looking down at my body next to my wife, as normally as I would look at, you know, anybody in the street or outside. So it was a perfectly normal experience, apart from a very traumatic one. And basically from that, that lasted for about 15 or 20 minutes, the whole experience. And it was a very, that obviously has never happened to me in that way at all before in my life, because it was a very real experience for me to go through. But what happened after a day or two, we kind of calmed down and realized what had happened, and it actually had sunk in for both of us, that my consciousness or my mind was very, very raised. And when I say that, I mean I was able to perceive things that I wouldn't normally be able to perceive. So I really, you know, in a metaphysical term, I glimpsed my soul, whatever way you want to put it. I experienced a higher consciousness, but I experienced my own notion of my soul, I suppose, is the best way of putting words to it. And from that experience, I was able to write down a lot of information, some that was already mm-hmm. in my mind, mm-hmm. but a lot of information that came or felt as though it came from without, you know, from outside of me, from an exterior source that I became aware of through that incident. So it was a very spiritual experience and something that I was required to share. It's an experience that, although you may not want to share, there are sometimes things you need to share to try and explain and help other people. So that's really how the book came about. And in 6 days, the book was written. So I never planned to write the book. It's not about making money or, you know, drawing people to come to our center. It's about sharing that information.
Well, Jonathan, I know that history is replete with people having mystical experiences, certainly after what we would term a near-death experience, where your consciousness really goes to another place and you start to see things from an entirely different level. It reminds me of the biblical story of St. Paul, who
absolutely
was a person that was out to punish Christians, and then after his road to Damascus experience, he was a great Christian teacher and went out of his way to make that his whole life. So there must be something related to that in your story also.
in another way, but I would say that, you know, I can understand that experience now totally, because when you are, think of yourself, Jake, as a body, as a human body, and that is primarily your existence, you understand yourself to be just a body, then you will see everything else as being separate bodies. And likewise with your mind, you see your mind as belonging to you and being separate from all other minds as being an individual. But in a spiritual sense, spirit sees spirit and sees the whole interconnectedness of all those things. So that's the sense that I had, that oneness, that interconnection, that sense of God. And it gave me a perception of a real world that exists beyond the mind of my intellect. So I don't need to classify that as being a certain name. I just understand the sense of it.
Well, I just tell people that I'm just anybody, and I'm just waiting for a near-life experience. You know? So I'm. That's where...
Well, we can arrange
one. We can have
one,
yes. I know. It's be careful what you wish for, right, Jonathan?
Yeah, absolutely.
You just might get it. When you are speaking in your book, which is very interesting, by the way, and a lot of interesting little ideas and pointers for the reader to kind of follow you through your experience and how you feel about life now. You talk about living in this fractional state where we're all sort of fractionalized, and we are separate, of course. We all in a way are separate, but you're saying in a way yes and in a way no, right?
Well, what I'm saying from the fractionate state, something that came to me, you know, when I was very, very raised and I was able to perceive things in a different way, the fractionate state describes the human being as being three parts, mind, body, spirit, or body, mind, spirit, if we work our way upwards. And very often we don't relate to all those parts of our being. Our evolution as a human being has taken us through stages. You know, when we were first half man, half monkey, if you like, then we were obviously at a very physical stage. And with the great revolutions and explorations, we have looked into the mind of the human being. And I think these days, the days of the internet and the wonderful books and information that's out there, we are now glimpsing into the spiritual side of the human being, because we're not at ease with the way the world is run and the way the world is, the way that one country can be extremely wealthy, another one can be living in poverty and see millions of people die every year purely on a financial basis. I don't think the world's population is happy with that scenario. And that's just not an empathic thing. It becomes a spiritual thing, because each person we lose unnecessarily is a loss to ourselves in that interconnected state. So it's not straightforward. It's a paradoxical kind of thing. But if we look at all the areas of our being, we can see how we can become whole. If we appreciate we do have a spiritual side, a spiritual consciousness, a capacity that can reach beyond our intellect, beyond the genius of your mind, actually, I think. And if you can appreciate that that exists, then you can learn to find it. And I think once you find that, the secret is then not to sit there thinking you're an enlightened being and sectioning yourself off from the rest of the world by pretending to be more aloof or somewhat more advanced than other people, but by sharing that, and sharing that in a way it can transcend all levels of human nature. So blending the body, mind, spirit into a way that's functional for all human beings.
That's excellent. Yeah, well put. You say in your book, and I like this little sentence here, you say, learning to develop reason beyond objective thought will allow creation of a positive future for all of Earth's inhabitants.
Yeah.
And that's very, I think that's very true. I think that people are understanding from so many directions now that the outcome has very much to do with your where your center is at in the present. And you create a future based on your center at that moment, and your future is much more positive if, in fact, that's the way you're believing and thinking. Am I right on that?
Yes. No, I think you're right on that. But I think, going back to that point, it's about recognizing the parts of you. If you haven't experienced all the parts of you, which you, it is paradoxical because we say, I'm me and that's it. But you're not. You have a body, you have a mind, and you do have a spiritual quality. You do have a soul, which is combined with all that, but it's still a separate part. So it works in two ways. And we have to get to each part to function at our highest capacity. In other words, you know, blending the mind, body, spirit being we are to work in the world. And that's what, you know, again, further into the book, I talk about something called spatial consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That is, to me, that's the key to basically recognizing, utilizing, and implementing space into our thoughts, our words, and our deeds to be able to move the planetary consciousness. And that sounds a bit extreme, but if everybody is able to perceive the existence of a consciousness that transcends the objective mind, in other words, beyond your normal everyday thought, and this is something very natural. It's not something supernatural at all. It's a very, very natural ability that all people have to still themselves, to find the space within, and really in the center of that space and stillness, your spatial consciousness, that's how you exist. If you take away your body and your mind, you will still exist because you are a spiritual being. And of course, it's a difficult thing to grasp, but the more people, it's the old 100th monkey syndrome, the more people that grasp we are more than a body and we require more than a materialistic world, then the more chance we have of that occurring.
Well, I know that there's a lot of people out there listening with different faiths and different ideas about what their faith actually says, but I think what you're saying is very similar to the idea that Christ said, that unless you be born again, you really can't enter the kingdom of heaven.
I think it's exactly the same. I just think it's we like to, as human beings, separate these things out and say, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Buddhist. We like to have that separation, but we're not separate. There is a perennial truth about God and philosophy that runs throughout time, throughout our history. You know, the words of Jesus ring perfectly true to me, but I understand them in, I think, more in the way that they were meant to be understood. They weren't meant to separate one man from the rest of the world mm-hmm. forever. They were meant to unite people in the world. They're meant as an example. To me, I see these people,
yes,
and Jesus
believe,
yeah. as a very great example of the potential of humanity in the world. It's something I have studied in depth with the Gnostic Gospels as well as the New Testament, and anybody can clearly see, I think, if you take the time to read with an open mind for yourself, that the God of the Old Testament, Jehovah, who was a pretty nasty kind of guy, you know, is not the same God that Jesus is talking about. So to me, this mm-hmm. is an evolutionary understanding of God, if you like, and of the sense of our higher selves.
Well, yes, I couldn't agree more. I don't claim to be a Bible scholar, but I have read the Bible, most of it, and I do find that the Old Testament tends to be more of a top-down religion, like, you know, you do as I say, and, you know, if you do all these things, that'll be great, but don't ask me why. And
yeah, and if not, Jake, you'll suffer. You will go to hell. You will burn, you know, equivalently.
Yeah.
It's a very early evolved state of a spiritual identity, whereas Jesus came along and said, and there are other people as well, said, no, this God is all-forgiving, all-loving. It's no different. And then Muhammad took that another different way. You know, Buddha took his experience a different way because they're individuals. Mm-hmm. They all have a different perspective. But there is a truth linking all those. So going back to Jesus, the words of Jesus, you know, being born again. Being born again is about discovering what you already are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the irony. We're so cluttered with our thoughts and with what we need to do and, you know, bringing up a family or going out to work or having all these things that are required to look good in society. We don't very frequently look at what we are, because what we are is probably quite frightening to some people. They don't have the time to look. You know, they don't allow themselves the time to look at what they are, to be still with themselves and to see the spiritual being that they are.
I think you're right, and I think that many people are afraid to, if they look, to see who they are and so on, that this might kind of separate them from a lot of the belief systems that people have around them, including their friends, and they're a little reticent to move over, to open up to that new belief system. In fact, it won't disenfranchise them so much, but it will liberate them into a more complete experience of life. And this is, it's like anything else, fear. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself, you know, that idea. And it's very true when it comes to these things.
But absolutely, and fear, and I think that's touched upon in the book. What is fear? You know, fear is focusing on that worry, on that extreme worry. You know, focusing on courage takes you away from fear. Or knowledge, you know, knowing that when your body has packed up, that you're still alive, takes away that fear of death for me in that experience. So fear is very much an element of the mind.
Yeah,
doesn't actually exist in reality. In my understanding of reality, fear does not exist.
No, I couldn't agree more. That's one thing I've realized over my short life so far, is that fear is something you think about, and then you think about the next thing, and you think about the next thing, and before you know, you've gone down this intellectual projection of ideas, which has got nothing to do with the moment you're in right now. It's just this intellectual step from one thing to another, and all of a sudden you've created this huge mountain of doubt, you know?
Absolutely. And if you turn that around, though, Jay, you've shown the ability that we all have to take a negative thought and accumulate it and make it worse and, in a way, make it happen. If we reverse that, take a positive thought and increase that positive thought, then we can make that happen.
Exactly.
That's how energy works. It's exactly how energy works. It's not complicated. It's very simple. But it's hard to train your mind, you know, to learn not to worry, not to fear, but to love and to share that with others.
I like that very much. You also talk about the age of Aquarius and the idea and the coming Mayan date of 2012, and that the whole galaxy or universe is aligning up in a very special way. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, I'm sure it's a very well publicized fact that there are many events, astrological events, as well as historical events appearing around this time. And I say from 2008, I think, to 2012. It's a very important time scale, I feel, in my awareness for the planet Earth. And there are many changes going on, as you know, you notice probably in North America with the elections going on there. That'll be interesting to see what occurs there, because I think we're entering a very positive time, but also a time that's slightly unstable, because you're throwing away all the old things to make way for the new, and there will be struggle. And I think energetically that happens with the planet, it happens with people. It happens with our weather system, for sure. I don't know if you've all noticed.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, we can't deny these things. These things are clearly obvious, I think, if you probably in 30 years, they'll probably say, yeah, it's actually true, you know, there is global warming. Whereas we all knew that, you know, a long time ago. You know, we don't have to have everything scientifically written on paper to know that it's true, do we? So,
Well, some people do.
Yeah.
Is it true?
Well, some people that work from intellect and mind only need to have verification from a mind. People that work from spirit need to sense and feel the truth. And that's the difference. That's the evolution we're moving into, is having a race of beings that can sense and feel truth. Imagine that. Well, you can't really fear anything if you sense and feel the truth. And I think this 2012 is part of that opportunity for mass consciousness to change on Earth. And like I said, with that, there'll be shifting and moving of tides. And, you know, there are going to be occurrences that will be seen to be good or bad as you change. It's kind of, you know, as you move out something, you move away an old building and create a new one. You're going to have a bit of dust and rubble, but it's down to us how much dust and rubble we, you know, scatter across the world, and how caring we are of the planet we live on and the people that live in it.
I remember I have this idea of the, you're talking about moving from one state of consciousness to another idea to another. It's like when if you're crossing a stream and you want to jump from rock to rock, there's a certain stage where you leave one rock and you're in the air, hopefully moving to the next rock where you can move further on from there. And it's, as human beings, we seem to really have a problem with leaving the first rock. But once that happens, we're okay.
Yeah, but I think there's so many of us, you know. It's not like there's a group of 12 of us. There are millions and millions and millions of people. And that's why you can't, in my understanding, you can't evolve from one stage to another just like that. But what will happen is a series of events and a series of awakenings, a series of books, a series of inventions, the internet, etc., etc., that gradually bring that possibility to shift and move forward. You know, that's what's bringing about that paradigm shift that we're approaching. But you can't shift everybody from, you know, one side of the river to the other. Like you said, you've got to move from stone to stone. And there are problems moving from stone to stone across the river in terms of consciousness. And that's why we need to have a stepping stone system of consciousness. The only way we can have that is by looking at how do we get across the river. Because there are people that know.
Yeah.
Jesus knew how to get across the river. Let's face it, he walked on it. You know, Buddha, Krishna, there's Lao Tzu, there are many, many spiritual people over the years that have pointed very clearly how to cross that river and how to move on to the next stone. And I just think that welling up of information in the world and the state of the world that we're living in has allowed that movement to occur for many people. And the exciting thing, Jake, for me is that it seems to be an increasing movement. You know, more and more people are giving up their normal lives, as it were, to seek something better.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to ask yourself, why is that? Is it because the world is in a bad state? Yes. But also, they are not fulfilling their own ability. They are not finding themselves. And finding themselves means finding that they are a body, a mind, and a spirit, that they are holistic beings.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with you there. I feel that now at this juncture in our evolution of consciousness, that there are many people leaving the old state, the old ideas and the old paradigms and everything else. And the basic reason is that we can't afford, as a planet, for example, even to carry on with the old ways. We've reached a point where a lot of people are saying, you know what, if we carry on with this, we're going to go down, 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 and we'll have less quality of life. But if we go this other way, and you're right, there are many, many people that are seeing this very clearly. And this is what's very exciting, I think, for all of us that can see this. You're seeing that people are saying, no, but there's this other way. And it's you're part of that clarion call, if you will, to sort of say to people, hey, look, this is where it is.
That's very kind of you, and I think we're all part of that, Jake. We just don't always realize it every moment, you know. If you look back at history, that's probably the easiest way to look at it as being understandable fact. And not just in religion, but you can look at Columbus, and I think we mentioned that before. You can look at Gandhi, you can look at Buddha, whoever. But none of those people accepted the consciousness or the mass consciousness of their day. They didn't accept it. They provided an awareness for something better to evolve. They transcended the consciousness of their time because they needed to. Gandhi needed to, Buddha needed to, and Columbus definitely needed to. You know, the understanding in the world in Columbus's time was that the boat would probably fall off the other side of the world, you know. And yet look what happened. So that's a familiar story I always remind myself of. That sense of exploration, that sense of finding something better from within. And I think if we look back at history, it's clearly there. And now is the time for that to happen with consciousness. I feel, you know, we've shown we're very, very ingenious inventors, creators, art, poetry, music, some fantastic things. But I think it's time for that movement of consciousness to show how really powerfully true we can be to each other as human beings. And in doing that, we will create change in the society.
Exactly. I wanted to ask you if, for the people that are listening, if you had some just general, maybe general pointers from your book that you could describe, if a person was thinking, well, okay, I'm open to this kind of thinking. What are some of the things that a person could do to sort of get the process started and get themselves moving in this positive new direction that we're talking about?
Well, I think if you're going to look at it in terms of working on your own and something you can do as a daily repertoire, as it were, it would be to look at yourself in an honest way, to look at your words, look at your thoughts, look at your deeds, look at those things that you regret. Why do you regret them? Because they're not what you wanted to do. So to be ruthlessly honest with yourself, that's a beautiful thing, because that will reveal the better side of you. That will reveal what you truly are, the spiritual being that you are. So, and that's a very, very hard thing. I think that's the hardest stage, is the very first stage. And that's why most people, I'm just going to go to work. You know, I can't be bothered to sit and contemplate something or to meditate or to read or to watch or listen to music just to still my mind, you know. But stilling your mind, that's the important part, creating that space to remember what you are and what you can be. That spatial consciousness, recognizing space in the universe, recognizing space that's around you in the air, recognizing space in nature. You know that plants, flowers are so beautiful, but they can't grow when they're all stuck together. Recognize the space that they require for growth. Recognize the space in the cycle of the seasons. Recognize the space in your deep breathing if you want to try meditation. There's a gap in between your two breaths, in and out. Recognize, you know, that space, because using the space aspect of the mind, you can connect all areas of your holistic being.
Mm-hmm.
So look for space. In that space is the stillness that you are, the truth of your being.
I like this little part of the book here. It's you say, at the end of our physical lives, we can only look back at the true significance of our existence by reflecting upon not what we have done for ourselves, but rather that which we have done for others. That's nice.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's true because my experience of, you know, my near-death experience, Jake, was that I suddenly felt very embarrassed because I thought I was going to die, and I was very concerned my wife would have to deal with my body, and I'm, you know, twice as big as her. So I looked at her and I said, sorry. I just said, sorry. I didn't know what to say because I knew I was going. It felt like I was leaving my body. So what I was thinking about at that point of death or near death was not about myself, not about how much money I had in the bank or, you know, how many times I've slept with different women or how many cars I've got. Or it wasn't about anything. It was about the truth of my being. And the greatest truth of my being is held forever in what I've done for other people. Because of what I've done for myself, well, I know that. You know,
exactly.
That's as far as it goes, isn't it? It's a very selfish orientated thing. But when it's shared, it becomes a very powerful thing, and it becomes a meaningful thing, and it becomes, you know, an energy of more than one. So I absolutely believe that, you know, in my heart, Jake, that to be true, that, you know, when you sit there, well, you've only got to imagine it. Imagine you were taking your last breath after the panic is over, of you recognizing the possibility of death, what are you honestly going to think about? Put it to yourself now. You know, if you've accepted death, you know, you're going to die in 30 seconds. Let's hope not. But let's say, you know, what if you've accepted the point of your death in 30 seconds' time, and you know that's going to happen, and you've accepted it, your mind has accepted it, then what do you think about?
Yes. Well, what I think about is, you know, if I'm going to die in 30 seconds, then I think, well, I think the only thing is sure is death and taxes, but after dying, after dying, I'll have neither. So the Lord is very giving that way, I find, you know. There's an old country song, but I'm paraphrasing it. It says, when I go to that great place someday, the only thing I'll take is what I gave away. Isn't that nice? I love that.
Beautiful.
You know, that's the only thing I'm going to take is what I gave away.
Well, I think that's the truth of it as well, because it's an energetic thing. What you do take is energy. You don't take any goods or chattels or money with you, of course, and you don't even take your body with you, you know. But what you take is that consciousness that you are. And also, that will always link up with those people you leave behind.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. This is a very good teaching. I'm glad we're covering a lot of this stuff today because I think it's going to be helpful for a lot of people. And remember that we're talking about Jonathan Harrison's book, We Are All One. And we're talking with the author right now from France, if you can believe that, all the way over in France. Where it's probably spring over there, isn't it?
Actually, it's not as nice as the last time we tried to do the interview. It's it's just turned a bit colder, but it's sunny during the days, but cold at night, you know. But,
yes, because you're in the south.
Yeah, I'm down by the Pyrenees. So as soon as it gets cold, I'm an hour from the Pyrenees. As soon as it gets cold, it just suddenly changes. But you get beautiful days, you know, in February and March, and then it might be cold at night. So we're just pretty aware because we've got two children, so we're quite careful about you know, heating and stuff and making sure they're warm enough.
Well, that's excellent. So I just like to go over some things here, Jonathan. Your book is We Are All One. People can go and buy this on Amazon.
Yeah, on Amazon.com.
Yes, Amazon.com. And also you have some websites there, and you also run a spiritual center there.
That's right. We've got a place called the Jubon Center of Healing and Awareness. And there's a website for that, if I give that. That's www.jubon.org. Say it again. It's www.jubon, which is D-U-B-O-N.org. And if you go to that website, you'll see we've got an old Armagnac farm. And basically we run holidays. If you're just interested in having a get away from it all holiday, we provide free healings. And we also do a selection of workshops which are based on the concepts in the book, as well as meditation, contemplation, aura and chakra work, that kind of thing, and attunements with nature, creative art, etc., etc. So I think we have three workshops this year. We have one at the end of April, one in June, and one in September. But if you go to the website, you can see all the information about that. There's also a website for the book, Jake, which, shall I give that one?
Yes, of course.
That's www.we-r-all-1.net, and that's the middle dash or the sixth dash on the keyboard.
Okay.
And also, there are, shall I carry on?
Oh, yeah, by all means.
I've got some poetry and music on YouTube, which people might be interested in listening to. And that's on www.youtube.com/DubonJohn, which is DubonJohn. And we've had some great responses from that. I just think it's something that, something a bit different. So if people are interested in some kind of mystical poetry with some music that they will find inspiring, have a go on that and listen on YouTube.
Well, that's really excellent, and I just want to thank you very much for being with us today. We did have some technical problems in other interviews, but I think today we're the powers of consciousness in the world are with us.
I hope so. It sounds good. Anyway, we've got a clear line.
Well, that pretty much wraps up another program here at Authors Audio, and we've been speaking to Jonathan Harrison from the Pyrenees in France, with his new book, We Are All One, and I highly recommend you have a look at this book. Until next time, this is Jake DC.